Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Sitting on Airavat, an elephant who can go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering, Lord Indra looked just like the sun rising from Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. On the top of the mountain called Udayagiri are large lakes from which water continuously pours in waterfalls. Similarly, Indra's carrier, Airavat, holds water and wine in reserve and showers it in the direction of Lord Indra. Thus Indra, king of heaven, sitting on the back of Airavat, appeared like the brilliant sun rising above Udayagiri. Om Agyana Tamrandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sarigod Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So these verses are continuing the description of the battle between the demigods and the demons, which has some unusual things in it. Usually when we hear of a battle, like in Afghanistan, there's a big complaint. They got these snatch Land Rovers. It was in the paper. They're considered very... they're not protected enough. So we see soldiers, you know, they got snatch Land Rovers. They got tanks. They got a uniform. They got a rifle. They got a helmet. Bombs. Go and kill each other like that. So it's rare to find soldiers riding on the backs of rabbits or ducks. Where were we? Hawks, human beings, yeah, like piggybacks. Buffaloes, timingalas, which are creatures of the water. They can swallow whales. So it's explained, mounted on animals of the water, land and sky, including animals with deformed bodies. Both armies faced each other and went forward. So, not only that, but generally when you're in the back of a snatch Land Rover or a tank, you're not being fanned by chamaras made of valuable jewels and pearls or decorated by canopies. So the whole description here is very fantastic. It's quite an amazing scene. Now, it's also described that the battle is taking place, you know, not in Afghanistan. It's on the shore of the Milk Ocean, where Svetadrip lies. So, where is that? You know, it's described Svetadrip is at the top of the universe. Sometimes at the top, sometimes it's described it's in the center of the universe. So, where are we in the universe? Like, is that way? Or in Australia, they think in the top is that way of the universe. So, it's happening somewhere, millions of miles away, and it's happened in a previous Manvantar era, so it's happening millions of years ago. So it's beyond the power of conception. It's beyond proof or disproof. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. So the Puranas are like that. The Puranas are histories of the universe. Now the only thing we can do with Puranas is accept them on the strength of the speaker of the Puranas, because this is Sukadev Goswami is speaking this. It's not, you know, it's not just some fiction writer who's making this up. It's Sukadev Goswami. He's a fully self-realized soul. So by Canto 8 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, if we've studied it, we should have enough faith by now that in the qualities of Sukadev Goswami that we can accept what he says. It may be beyond our conception or beyond our experience, but we don't have a choice in the matter. Puranas just need to be accepted. And this is traditionally the way Vedic literature was regarded as sufficient evidence. Shruti Praman is called. Prabhupada said in one lecture, that which is beyond our power of perception is learned by hearing from authorities. Because what we can perceive in life is very small, actually. Our range of experience is very small. So if we're going to try and understand what's the truth behind our existence, we can't do it simply by analyzing with our mind and senses. We come up against a brick wall because our mind and senses are limited. So therefore, Shruti Praman has traditionally been the evidence accepted. Now, the difference between us and personalities like Sukadeva Goswami is a difference of ignorance. One person is in knowledge and the other person is in ignorance. Like, we're the ones in ignorance. And Sukadeva Goswami is the one in knowledge. So this ignorance of the soul is described by Lord Brahma in the third canto, when Lord Brahma created the material universe. There's five coverings of ignorance, which is called Tamisra, Andatamisra, Tamas, Moha, and Maha Moha. So we say, you know, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we talk about ignorance a lot. Oh, we're in ignorance or we're in knowledge. But to actually analyze what it is, what ignorance is an interesting thing. Because the first layer of ignorance is called Tamisra. Prabhupada explains as envy or anger towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's this... The root of it all is this envious. Why is Krishna the supreme? The jiva, you know, I should be the supreme. I should enjoy. Why should Krishna be the enjoyer? I want to taste the position of the enjoyer rather than the enjoyed. That's the hinge of our ignorance. And from that, once that envy comes, then the material energy begins to manifest around us. So comes Andatamisra. Andatamisra is a term given to the concept that there's a thing called death. There's no such thing called death. Death doesn't exist. Death is an illusion. But we accept death. Death is the end. In one place, Prabhupada translates, Andatamisra means the thinking that death is the end. So we think of death, that death is a big thing. Now, Krishna doesn't consider death to be a big thing at all, actually. From the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, dihiro smita dehe komaram yobanamjara tatade hantara pratir diras tatra namuyati. Krishna explains death. He says you have a baby's body, then a youth's body, an adult's body, an old age body, then a baby's body, then a youth's body, then an adult's body, then over and over again. As according to Krishna, from Krishna's point of view, this thing called death is no more significant than the change of body from a baby to a youth to an adult. But in our ignorance, because we're so attached to the body, we're thinking this body is all in all. So therefore, when this body ends, that's death. It's a big thing. It's a huge thing. But from Krishna's point of view, and from the point of view of realized souls, death is no more significant than any other change of body. And you can see by studying Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's attitude to death is quite callous. We consider it callous. He doesn't consider it callous because he knows that the soul is not the body. Obviously, Krishna's the supreme self-realized personality. He's never touched by ignorance. So, Tamisra and Andatamisra, Tamas. Now, the next stage in the development of ignorance, Tamas means we forget who we are. We've forgotten that we're the soul. Tamas, we're covered by ignorance and we've forgotten that we're the soul. So, things don't stay static in the material world. So, by forgetting we're the soul, then comes Moha, which means we accept something false. I've forgotten that I'm the soul, so I'm accepting that this body is me. This is Moha. Now, because this body is me, then everything in relationship to this body, this is called Maha Moha. I consider it, I'm attached to things in relationship to this body. Like, you walk down the street and you see a car that's been smashed up, and you think, oh, this is bad luck. But it doesn't really bother you too much. But if you walk down the street and see your car smashed up, then you begin to, you know, or in the Brahmachari ashram, if somebody's ripped their dhoti, or some, you know, because they're free from such attachment. Stolen gumsha. You have an inquisition, Spanish inquisition over the stolen gumsha. So the point is Maha Moha means that our attachment moves from the real thing, Krishna, onto the false thing, the body, and from the body out into the world. Now, Maha Moha, attachment to things related to the body means the world. Because each one of us only has access into our own world. We don't have access into other people's worlds. So, Maha Moha means to be absorbed in the world, essentially. So this is us, Maha Moha. Maha 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 Moha, really, in Kali Yuga. That's all we have is Maha Moha. We're so obsessed with things outside of ourselves in the world. So this idea is the it's that thing that pushes the need for scientific proof, scientific evidence, empiric evidence. Things should be proved empirically. Is there a God? Is there not a God? Like, this argument goes on. Is there a God? Is there not a God? And people want a proof. Now, there's no proof for the existence of God. And there's no proof for the non-existence of God. Why? Because God is transcendental, is param. Our means of analyzing things is material. So the material cannot stretch to the spiritual. So when we're in a position of maha moha, we want everything to be explained and everything to be proved analytically, empirically, scientifically. But there's no proof. Now, the evidence why there's no proof for the existence of God is observable. Because this argument between theism and atheism has been going on for how long? Centuries. Millennia, even. Now, there are very intelligent people on both sides giving arguments in favour and opposing God's existence. So, you know, like in Life Comes From Life, Prabhupada gives so many very reasonable, rational, clear explanations why there is a God. There has to be a God. So we accept that. You know, we accept Prabhupada's instructions. There has to be a God, obviously. Otherwise, where does everything come from? You know, it just comes from chance. But people say, yeah, it comes from chance. So there's no hard evidence to conclusively prove to someone that there is a God. And there's no hard evidence to conclusively prove that there's no God. Like, for example, there's hard evidence to prove that if you throw a brick off the top of the London Eye, it will hit the ground. You know, you can prove it because there's equations relating to the laws of gravity. You can demonstrate it. You can go to the top of the London Eye and throw a brick off. It'll go down and hit the ground. There are physicists who can calculate the speed of the brick at each point in space on its way down, and when it hits the ground, how big the hole is going to make, depending on the density of the brick, etc., etc. So you can say, I don't believe that a brick will make a hole when it hits the ground after you throw it off the London Eye. And you can say, well, I can prove it to you. You know, I can prove it on paper with formulas, and I can demonstrate it. Now, that's not possible when it comes to proving the existence of God. Now, there's a good reason why, which we'll come to. But one point is that quite often devotees get a bit disturbed by this argument. You know, scientists come up with new theories and new evidence or whatever, and devotees can get disturbed. But it's not a matter for, it's not a thing that should disturb us. Because we worship Krishna. Now, Krishna is not God. Obviously, Krishna is God. But Krishna is not, to say Krishna is God does not describe Krishna. One feature of Krishna is God. Now, originally there's Krishna, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, it's described at length. Originally there's Krishna. From Krishna comes Balaram. From Balaram comes Chaturvyuha, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Iruda. Then comes Narayan, and from Narayan comes the second Chaturvyuha. So we've gone Balaram, Chaturvyuha, Narayan, Chaturvyuha. From the second Chaturvyuha, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Iruda, from that Maha Sankarshan, he is the reservoir of all living entities. So now we begin to get a glimpse of God. This is our source. The source of the jiva is Maha Sankarshan. So from Maha Sankarshan, an expansion, a partial expansion of Maha Sankarshan is Maha Vishnu. Now we start getting into the realm of God, because from Maha Vishnu, through his breathing, comes material universes. He enters into each universe as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then he expands again as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, and enters into the heart of all living beings. So when God is in the heart, it's Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. So we're already talking about a part of 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 Krishna. Like an expansion of an expansion of an expansion. So to say Krishna is God is not complete. Krishna is one feature. God is one feature of Krishna, I should say. So generally in religion, the conception of God goes, there's three things. There's what's called Jagat, Jiva, Ishvara. The world, the individual soul, and God. So the world is here, I'm here, and God is somewhere else. God is beyond somewhere. In all religions it's like that. Because the world exists. I exist, and God exists. But where God exists, I don't really know. Up. But then in Australia, it's down. So where he actually exists, you know. Now, The concept of atheism, they accept Jagat and Jiva. They accept the world exists and I exist. But they don't accept Ishvara. They don't accept that God exists. But then you have to ask the question, well, where does everything come from? Okay, well, everything comes from there was nothing and then there was a big bang. And then everything came from nothing and, you know, everything is here as we see it now. So the big bang exists for them. So you've got the world, me and God on one side, and you've got the world, me, and the Big Bang on the other side. Now, we all agree on the world and me, that they both exist. One person doesn't really know anything about God, doesn't know why God created the material universe, can't say anything about who he is, what his qualities are, etc. Has no real realization of God, but he believes God exists. Now, another person doesn't believe God exists. He believes the Big Bang happened. He's got no real evidence for the Big Bang. He doesn't know why it happened. He doesn't know where it happened, etc., etc. So the only thing that's different is that one name is God and the other name is Big Bang, essentially. That's the only difference. Now, there is another difference. The other difference is that the person who accepts God, a theist at least accepts that there's something beyond what I can perceive. There's something beyond what I can perceive. And because there's something more powerful than me, beyond what I can perceive, that leads to worship. So I worship that personality. So this worship develops sukriti in the heart of the individual. And when enough sukriti is built up, then the person can come to an understanding of transcendence, of Krishna. So this understanding, this difference between Krishna and God. It's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the introduction, the very first paragraph, the first line. Prabhupada says, "The conception of God and the conception of absolute truth are not on the same level. The Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth. The conception of God indicates the controller, whereas the conception of the absolute truth indicates the summum bonum, or the ultimate source of all energies." So the conception of God indicates a controller. The conception of the absolute truth indicates the summum bonum, or the ultimate source of all energies. There are many vibhutimat sattvas, controllers or gods, with various specific powers. But the absolute truth is one without a second. This Srimad Bhagavatam designates the absolute truth, or the summum bonum, as the param satya. Param satya. So the Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't deal with what Prabhupada calls here vibhutimat sattva, a controller or a god. It deals with param satya. Now the difference is that if you have a god, like Lord Vishnu appears in the capacity of God in many places throughout the Bhagavatam. Now if you have a conception of God, then there's competition. Because there's competition between Hiranyakashipu and Vishnu. Lord Vishnu, Hiranyakashipu wanted to kill Vishnu. Hiranyaksha was fighting with Vishnu. So atheists will deny the existence of God. There's a duality that comes in. And there's a competition between a person and God. You know, is this God? Is that person God? Is the other person God? Now, this doesn't apply to Krishna consciousness. The reason being that Krishna consciousness means param satyam, the absolute truth, one without a second, which means there's nothing other than God. There's nothing other than Krishna, I should say. And it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanaban mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudulabha. That after many births, a gyanavan, one who's actually self-realized, surrenders to Krishna. Why? Because vasudeva sarvamiti, everything that exists is vasudev. There's nothing that exists that's not Krishna. So Krishna says, yayata mam prapadyante tamzadeva bhajamyaham. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. So if we're surrendering to Krishna and we have faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, someone else who's an atheist, Richard Dawkins, for example, is surrendering to the absolute truth in a different way. He wants to forget Krishna. Mata smritir gyanam apovanam cha. So if we're getting into an argument, if we're getting disturbed by an argument between a theist and an atheist, we should step back a bit and analyze that the power that the atheist has to defeat God is coming from God, is coming from Krishna himself. So if we're stuck in an argument trying to defeat atheists, we should know the only reason why we're trying to bring people to theism is so that they can worship that which is transcendental, develop Sukriti, and come to the point of understanding the absolute truth. But in ourselves, we should hanker for shanti, spiritual peace. And that spiritual peace comes from knowledge, from jnana. Now, like I say, the person who is fighting against Krishna is empowered by Krishna. Now, it's explained nicely in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad, two diametrically opposed individuals. You don't get any more opposites than Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu was the ultimate atheist. He hated Vishnu. He couldn't see, and in fact, he couldn't see Vishnu anywhere. After Hiranyaksha, it's described that after Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Vishnu, Hiranyakashipu travelled the entire universe trying to find Vishnu to kill him. He couldn't find him anywhere. So he went to Vaikuntha to look for Vishnu, and he couldn't find Vishnu in Vaikuntha. Because when Lord Vishnu saw him coming, he decided to hide from him. So he hid in the one place he knew he wouldn't look, was inside his own heart. Because Hiranyakashipu was looking outside everywhere trying to find Vishnu to kill him. Now, Prahlad, everywhere he looked, he saw Krishna. He couldn't see anything but Krishna. Hence the argument, oh, is he in the pillar? Yes, he's in the pillar. And then Nisringadev manifested from the pillar. So Hiranyakashipu, he couldn't see Krishna anywhere. Prahlad Maharaj, he couldn't see anything except Krishna everywhere. So Hiranyakashipu is saying to Prahlad, he said, O most impudent, most unintelligent disruptor of the family, O lowest of mankind, you have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj. My son Prahlad, you rascal, you know that when I am angry, all the planets of the three worlds tremble, along with their chief rulers. By whose power has a rascal like you become so impudent that you appear fearless and overstep my power to rule you? So Hiranyakashipu is saying, how the whole universe trembles when I become angry. Where have you got this power to resist and remain fearless in my presence? So Prahlad's answer is very interesting. He says, Na kevalam me bhavatashchara jan, savai balam baalinam chapare sham, pare vare mi stira jangama ye, brahmadeo yena vasam pranitaha. Prahlad Maharaj said, My dear king, the source of my strength, of which you are asking, is also the source of yours. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the only strength for everyone. Without him, no one can get any strength. Whether moving or not moving, superior or inferior, everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Savai balam balinam chapare sham. He says, all the strength, everybody's power, this is the absolute truth, this is Krishna. Everybody's power comes from Krishna. Everybody's power. So the power of the demon comes from Krishna, and the power of the demigod comes from Krishna. So all power comes from Krishna. So the point I'm making is that if we have the conception that Krishna is God, as if Krishna is a controller, and we're separating Krishna from anything in existence, then that's not the full feature. That's not actually Krishna. That's not the full feature of Krishna. So we need to come to this level of understanding through studying the Bhagavatam. So there was a lecture here at the Manor, a Prabhupada lecture, last winter, around about last November. He was speaking on the third canto, Kapila Dev's instructions. And he was speaking, he was saying the neti-neti approach, the negative. He said there's a negative and a positive, a process of negation and a positive approach to Krishna consciousness, to spiritual life. And he said, some people, many people advocate the negative, the process of negation, neti neti, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this. And this neti neti is actually, again, Prahlad Maharaj recommends in his teachings in the Bhagavatam. Dehastu sarva sangato jagatashtur itid vida. Atrevam rigya purusho neti neti atat tyajan. There are two kinds of bodies for every individual soul. A body made of five gross elements and a subtle body made of three subtle elements. Within these bodies, however, is the spirit soul. One must find the soul by analysis, saying, this is not it, this is not it. Thus one must separate spirit from matter. So this process of separating spirit from matter is recommended by Prahlad Maharaj. Now, Prabhupada said that the negative is not enough. The negative process means that as we give up, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not this ego, whatever we're left with at the end, well, that's what I am. Now, Prabhupada said that the negative is not enough, the positive is also required, that we should know that I am the soul, I am the servant of Krishna. So, he said the negative process is generally very difficult for people in this age to understand the negative process. So therefore, at least if they can do the positive, that's good. That's good for us. So if we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're doing some service, and we're thinking of ourselves that I am Krishna's devotee, then that's good. But Prabhupada said that that's not enough. Both things are required. Both things are required. Now, the reason both things are required is because there's a thing called prakrita bhakti, materialistic devotional service. Now, prakrita bhakti means I am this body and I am Krishna's servant. I'm thinking I'm this body and I'm a servant of Krishna. That's prakrita bhakti. Now, prakrita bhakti will only take you so far. It only takes you to the point of prakrita bhakti. It doesn't take you any further. In order to get further, we have to drop away what we're not. Now, when we drop away what we're not, then we become that thing that we are. And when we become that thing that we are and engage in devotional service, then that's bhakti. Narada Muni says, Sarvapadi binirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchite. So the second half of that verse, hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchite, means that when you engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses, that's called bhakti. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Kija. So to engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses is bhakti. Now, that's prakrita bhakti. The first half of that verse, sarvapadi binirmuktam. Upadi means any designation. Anything that's not us is an upadi. So as far as we're concerned, when it relates to us, that means everything. It means everything. Because everything that we accept as part of us is not us. There's no part of us. We're in such maya, such maha moha, that everything that we consider to be me, it's not me. The body, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, the family, relatives, friends, possessions, activities, you know, my conception of myself, this whole thing, none of it is actually me. So Narada Muni says, sarva upadi, all upadis, without exception, every upadi, vinir muktam, get rid of it, every single upadi, when it's cleared off. Sarva upadi vinir muktam, tat parat vena nirmalam. Nirmalam means when the soul is situated in its own pure state, without being contaminated by the material modes. In that condition, rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. That's actual bhakti, when you serve Krishna in that condition. Now, how is this done? How is it cleared off? There's only one way that it's cleared off, that the mala, the contamination, the upadis are cleared off, and it's by hearing from the self-realized soul. Now, we have our sadhana. We have our devotional service, our practical devotional service, which is also part of our sadhana. We have our preaching, which is also part of our sadhana, actually. Our preaching should be done in a certain way. We're not on the spontaneous platform yet, so our preaching is actually also a sadhana. We've been engaged in all these activities by the order of the spiritual master. So this is sadhana. So what sadhana does is that it gives regulation in life, and it helps develop the mode of goodness, where a person can have more clarity in his mind, more attention in their mind, and can hear more attentively the message of the spiritual master. But the thing that actually cleanses the upadis, the designations, is hearing from a realized soul. Now, there's sufficient, I won't go into it now, and I probably shouldn't mention it because it's quite a controversial point, but there is sufficient evidence in the Srimad Bhagavatam, sufficient, if anybody's interested, I can bore you to death with it. There's sufficient evidence in the Srimad Bhagavatam to state that this hearing has to come directly from the lips of a devotee, personally present. Prabhupada himself says in one purport, no other media is sufficient. Not tapes, not books, no other media. And the reason is, Krishna's in the heart. In the heart. We're in darkness, so our heart is in darkness. In order for our heart to be illuminated, we have to come in contact with a person who's illuminated. It's not the hearing, it's not the information which causes the purification. It's the transfer from heart to heart. Tene Brahma Hrida. Lord Vishnu originally spoke Srimad Bhagavatam and enlightened Lord Brahma in the heart. Now Krishna in the heart of Lord Brahma spoke to Narada Muni. Krishna in the heart of Narada Muni heard. So when Krishna in our heart decides that that message can go into the heart, that's when the message goes in. If Krishna in the heart, if we haven't got sufficient surrender or desire or whatever reason that's blocked off, then the message comes into the ears, in through the ears, into the brain, we remember it and we regurgitate it ad nauseum to anybody who will listen. But the real thing is that a self-realized soul speaks, enters the holes of the ears, goes into the heart. Krishna illuminates in the heart. There's no difference between Krishna in the heart and Krishna manifests outside as the spiritual master. This is the real relationship. So like I say, there's sufficient evidence in the Bhagavatam to have a massive discussion about it. But this point is also explained in Bhagavad Gita 18:54. The previous point, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nasochiti Nakankshati, Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So again, we talk about bhakti. You know, we're thinking that our activities are bhakti. You know, my chanting is bhakti, my study of Shastra is bhakti, my cleaning the temple is bhakti, my offering puja is bhakti, my harinam is bhakti, whatever it is, we're thinking it's bhakti. And it is bhakti. It is devotional service. But it's one level of bhakti. But the actual thing about bhakti is not the activity. It's not the activity, it's a relationship. Now that relationship has to happen on a particular level. It has to happen on a spiritual level in order for it to be classified in Krishna's eyes as bhakti. Because what Krishna considers bhakti is called para-bhakti, transcendental devotional service. Mad-bhaktim labhate param. He attains para-bhakti. So who attains para-bhakti? Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochiti Nakankshati. A Brahma Bhuta attains Parabhakti. Brahma Bhuta means liberated soul. So there's Brahma Bhuta and there's Jiva Bhuta. And there's a big difference between the two. Jiva Bhuta is described in quite a number of places in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhumirapo Nalovayu Kamano Buddhir Evacha Ahankara Tiyame Pina Prakriti Rashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, these comprise my separated material energies. Then, apare amitasthvanyam prakritim vidime param, jiva bhuta mahabaho, yaye dam tayate jagat. So, besides these, there's another superior energy of mine comprising the living entities, namely jiva bhuta, namely us. We're jiva bhuta. Now, jiva bhuta means conditioned. And what's the symptom of a conditioned soul? Yaye dam dharyate jagat. Two symptoms. First, the conditioned soul is the power that gives the body life. So he's given the body life. Also, yaye dam dharyate jagat, he's struggling in this body. He's struggling in this body. Prakriti Stani Karshati. What's the other verse? Struggling very hard with the six senses. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hrite Shaya Arjuna Tishtati. What's the next one? Mame Vamsa Jiva Loke. Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So again, Jiva Bhuta. Jiva Bhuta is in that verse. And it specifically said, what's a Jiva Bhuta doing? He's only doing one thing. We think we're doing loads of things, but we're not doing loads of things. We're doing one thing. That one thing is we're struggling hard with the senses and the mind. We're struggling in this world. Jiva Bhuta. That's us. We're struggling every day. We struggle. We get up in the morning and we struggle. We struggle to get up. And then we struggle to, do whatever we have to do during the day. And then we struggle to get sleep again. And then we struggle to get up. It's a struggle, and it's a chore, and it's a miserable. And then at the end, what's the result at the end of it? Ask anybody who's old what the result is at the end of it. Misery, aches, pains. You know, you can see, anybody can see the result, you know. Or if you don't make it to old age, you get your brain splattered all over the ground by a truck. You know what I mean? There was a guy, everybody, we should take notice of these things. There was a guy in Greenford, he's walking along the road. A Tesco van mounted the pavement and splattered him into the ground, you know. So the fire brigade was called, they had to drag him out from under the truck. So the guy who was walking, you think you're safe walking on the pavement, you know. But, you know, and you're thinking, oh, by my prowess, I will protect myself in this world. So you're thinking, well, if I see a van coming, I'm going to jump out of the way. But the van came from behind him, splat, folded him over, like, in two, you know, like, what's that, yoga asana, where your legs are out and your face is down. Perfect yoga, splat, dead, just like that. He was on the phone at the time, so there's someone on the phone to him, having a chat, and then the phone goes dead. So he's like, oh, well, he must have lost reception. No, he didn't lose reception. He just got run over by a Tesco van. You know, so you have to think about it. Can anybody say, hands up, who's not going to get run over by a Tesco van today? Can anybody say they're not going to get splattered today? Today could be the day, you know. So we struggle through life, and then at the end of it, we die. That's us. That's Jiva Bhuta. Now, Brahma Bhuta is a different thing that we don't have experience of at present, but we can hear of through Bhagavad Gita. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, na sochati na kankshati. First of all, Prasanatma, not kankshati. Prasanatma means fully peaceful. He's not disturbed by anything. Brahma Bhuta. There's no ahankar anymore. There's no false ego. He's liberated. He's on the platform of Brahman. He is Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi. He's non-different in quality from Krishna. So, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma, his Atma is completely Prasanna. There's no disturbances. Why is there no disturbances? Na sochati na kankshati. There's no hankering and no lamentation. Hankering means concern about the future, wanting something for the future. Lamentation means suffering about things that have happened in the past. So in the liberated state, there's no past and no future. Therefore, there's no old age, no disease, no death, no birth, eternal life. So, nasochati nakankshati. So, because there's no time for him, there's no hankering, no lamentation, he's fully peaceful. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. He sees everything equally, he sees all living beings equally. In the Bhagavatam 11th canto, sarva bhuteshu ya pasyet, bhagavat bhava mahatmanaha. The description of an Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava. He sees every Bhagavat Bhavam Atmanaha. Everything is a manifestation of Bhagavan. Every individual living entity is a manifestation of Bhagavan. Every inanimate object is a manifestation of Bhagavan. So, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Oh, the same point is described repeatedly. There's only one point to understand, actually, in the Vedic literatures, and it's described repeatedly in different ways to try and get it into our brain. What the point is. The point is Krishna. Now, sama sarveshu bhuteshu, the only way you can see all living beings equally is if you see Krishna everywhere. If you see Krishna, if you're fully self-realized, Krishna conscious. And then in that position, mad bhaktim labhate param, in that position of self-realization, then para bhakti happens. So, from the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, this point is made. That you're not the body, you're actually the soul. Dehinos minyatadehe. From the very beginning, there's a difference between the... Not that you have a soul, you are the soul. Sarvapadi binir muktam means kick out all these misconceptions that you are anything different than the soul. Anything that is changing is not you. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. Anything that's changing is not you. So analyze yourself. This is what Shastra is saying. We need to analyze ourselves to find what is it, is that thing that's not changing. That thing that's not changing is me. The body is changing. The mind is changing. The ego is changing. Everything's changing. But there's something very subtle inside which is not changing. That unchanging thing is who we are. Now, In the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami's final instructions to Parikshit Maharaj, he says exactly the same thing. He says, Aham Brahma Param Dharma. He said, you should know that you are Brahman, you are the soul. So after the entire Bhagavatam, it's the same point that's being made. There's only one point to be made. If we can identify, if we can come to our original position as the soul, then surrender happens. Bahunam Janmanamante, after many births, Bahunam Janmanamante, Gyanavan, Mam Prapadyate, one who's actually in knowledge, one who's self-realized, one who's on the Brahma Bhuta platform, one who's on the platform of Sat, the spiritual energy, he surrenders to Krishna. Because Vasudeva Sarvamiti, he knows that only Krishna exists. So this is the process. And the reason I'm saying all this today is in this section of the Bhagavatam, what we see is that the demigods and the demons are struggling very hard with the senses and the mind because they're battling for the heavenly kingdom. They want something in the material world. So Krishna says, Yayata mam prapadyante, as one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. And he also says, I'm equal to all, but one who renders service unto me is a friend, is in me, and I am a friend to him. So the demigods surrender to Vishnu. You see it repeatedly in this canto. They keep surrendering, they keep going and fighting, and then they get defeated, and then they surrender to Vishnu, and then Vishnu helps them out and kills all the demons, and then they get what they wanted. So this point is being made, if we surrender to Krishna, then Krishna helps us. The demons rejected Krishna, so Krishna left them alone. So Krishna sided. He didn't side with the demigods, he reciprocated with the demigods' surrender. Now, the point of this canto, because later on in this canto we'll see that the leader of the demons, Bali Maharaj, is the one who did the real surrender, Atma Nivedanam. He's famous in the Bhagavatam. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Bandanam Dasyam Sakyam Atma Nivedanam. Out of the 9 processes of devotional service, Bali Maharaj is considered the authority for Atma Nivedanam. The demon did proper Atma Nivedanam. So what's the difference? Is that his Atman of Edenam was done to Param Satyam, Satyam Param Dhimahi. In the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the first verse, it says, Satyam Param Dhimahi, I meditate on the absolute truth. At the end of the Bhagavatam, about 3 verses from the end, Suta Goswami says, Satyam Param Dhimahi. So therefore, the beginning and the end is Satyam Param Dhimahi, I meditate on the supreme absolute truth. Not like we discussed, not God, the supreme absolute truth, Krishna. So therefore, throughout the Bhagavatam, the whole point is to teach us Satyam Param Dhimahi. So when Satyam Param Dhimahi happens, then Atma Nivedanam happens. So Bali Maharaj is an example of Atma Nivedanam, full surrender. Not surrender like the demigods, that, oh, I want something, therefore I'm going to approach Krishna. But proper surrender, transcendental surrender, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakankshati. And on that platform, that's the platform, you know, we need to hear about, we need to meditate on deeply. That's the platform we want to get to. The sadhana platform is good for regulation in life. But you can keep having a regulated life. You can get born again and have a regulated life, and born again and have a regulated life. And you always run the risk of falling down. So it behooves a person to try to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, try and understand what are the higher realms of devotional service on the liberated platform, full in spiritual knowledge. So I'll stop there. We've gone past 8:30. Any questions or comments?